next argument will be presented by attorneys who are appearing from the same two locations, so I'll ask the marshal to call the case. Counsel for appellant, when you are ready to begin, we are ready for argument. Certainly take the time you need to get organized.
Good morning. Is St. Louis County ready?
I wasn't sure.
St. Louis County, counsel for respondent, are you also ready?
I am, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you, okay.
Perfect. All right.
All right.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Sarah Eitenauer. I'm an attorney at the Office of the State Public Defender, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Guy Robert Franklin Raybould. Raybould's sentence must be reversed in this case for three reasons. First of all, because nudity is not a fact that forms the basis for the departure factor of particular vulnerability. Second of all, even if this court were to find that nudity does support the factor of particular vulnerability, the facts in the record here do not support the finding of this fact. And third,
the finding of what fact?
The finding that the nudity made the victims particularly vulnerable. Okay. And third, even if it did apply here, the single aggravating factor is insufficient to establish a severe and aggravating circumstance warranting the more than double upward departure that the court imposed. The sentencing court can impose an aggravated departure where substantial and compelling reasons exist for that departure. The issue before this court basically boils down to, first of all, whether or not nudity is the proper basis for the departure factor of particular vulnerability. Neither the sentencing guidelines nor the courts have adopted nudity as a basis for particular vulnerability. The sentencing guidelines have actually defined facts that support the factor of particular vulnerability, and nudity is not on that list. Characteristics that have been found and that are outlined in the guidelines are age, particularly where a victim is rather old or rather young, infirmity. There was a case that relied upon that fact where the victim was a 74-year-old woman with a cane. The defendant kicked the cane out from under her. And the third one is reduced physical or mental capacity. And the courts have typically found that fact where a person is defenseless or has a cognitive impairment or is unconscious.
But don't the guidelines also provide that the list is non-exclusive?
Yes, the guidelines do provide that. But they do, what's interesting about the particular vulnerability factor is they do provide a list of characteristics or a list of facts that would support a finding of particular vulnerability. And nudity is not like any of the facts that would be found that are on that list.
I mean, because it's non-exclusive, it doesn't mean that we can't consider it.
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct. But what I'm asking,
the guidelines.
Yes. Yes. The court could consider
it. The issue is whether this made them more vulnerable, being nude, right?
Correct.
All right.
Correct. And no court has held yet that it did.
Can you explain why, when you're committing a burglary and you want to steal guns, why would you have someone disrobe and be nude during the burglary, other than to make them more vulnerable? I'm trying to understand why this wouldn't be.
I'm having a hard time hearing it.
Okay, I'll speak up. I'm not speaking into
I need
my
a volume
microphone.
Button. Oh.
It's me. I apologize.
Oh, sorry. If you want to jump to the facts of this case, even if this court did find that nudity is a factor, or a fact that could be found to support the factor of particular vulnerability, the facts of this case don't support it. And this is not the case to make that finding.
Don't support
in
it.
This case,
don't support it. You mean don't support the proposition that this is a severe aggravating factor? Is that what you mean?
Well, that, but also that nudity made the victims particularly vulnerable in this case. There's no evidence in the record that it did. There was a Blakely trial. The victims testified. They did not testify that the nudity prevented them from seeking help, prevented them from escaping, prevented them from fighting back. There was no evidence to that whatsoever. There's no evidence that it put them at a psychological disadvantage. And so this case just doesn't have the facts to support that it was indeed a factor that should be applied here. So it's more similar to those cases, Higgs and McClay. In Higgs, there was a pregnant woman. The court found that her pregnancy did not make her particularly vulnerable in the face of a gun. And there's McClay was a petite woman, I believe, and the court found that her petite stature did not make her more vulnerable in the face of a gun. That's more similar to what we have here, is the victim's nudity did not make them more vulnerable. The crime was accomplished because of the guns that were pointed at them. They were afraid of bodily harm or death. The nudity didn't contribute to that.
But, I mean, doesn't it make it more vulnerable? Because if they're naked, they're going to be less likely to run. Just as
well,
it,
and maybe
I mean, there was a case where they held that the presence of a child made them particularly vulnerable. That's that the Grand Prix case, because they didn't want to flee and leave their child behind. I mean,
sure.
Why wouldn't this be akin to that? And that they don't want to flee because they don't want to be running outside their house with the neighbors seeing them in the nude.
Sure. Well, even if Your Honor's found that the nudity could be a basis for a particular vulnerability, like I said, it doesn't apply in this case because the victims didn't say that it did. Nobody asked the victims if the nudity played into their decision not to fight back or not to escape or not to call for help after they were ordered to strip. I think they did call for help before the defendant made it into the room, but there's no evidence here to support that finding. So the district court here didn't have a source of authority for, first of all, finding that nudity is a fact that could be support the factor. And second of all, there just weren't the facts in the record to support the finding. So this is simply not that case to make that holding. I think, you know, the bottom line in this case is when you separate Raybould's conduct from that of his co-defendants, it was the co-defendant who ordered them to strip. It was the co-defendant who later committed the sexual assault. Raybould didn't do any of that. And so when you divorce the conduct there at that point and you focus just on Raybould's, which is what Leija instructs, you focus on the conduct of the defendant, his conduct here just doesn't rise to the level of a substantial and compelling circumstance to warrant a departure based on particular vulnerability. And that's why in the third point is his sentence is excessive.
If we disagree with you on that point, you still have an argument that even if it was a factor, that it wasn't a severe aggravating factor, do you not?
Correct, Your Honor.
Was a double departure, more than a double departure.
Correct, Your Honor. This was a more than double upward departure. I know that this issue wasn't briefed, but Barthman is on review by the Minnesota Supreme Court at the moment. That wasn't disclosed in any of the briefs, but that is addressing some of these issues as well. But the bottom line in this case is the court never found that this was a severe and aggravating factor. The court simply found it was a substantial and compelling circumstance. My position is that applies to the co-defendant. He's the one who instigated this. There's no evidence that my client knew going into this that was going to happen, that the co-defendant was going to order them to strip nude. There's just the evidence in this case just simply doesn't support it.
Is there case law that requires the court to make a finding that it is a severe aggravating factor to go beyond a double durational departure?
Well, Your Honor, it wasn't. I think Norton addresses that, if I remember correctly.
That the trial court must make a finding of severe aggravating?
I think that's what's on review right now with the Supreme Court under Barthman. I can give you the slip opinion for that. It's 17-1191 is the case number, but that's currently what's being reviewed is whether the severe and aggravating factors can have to be found and warrant the departure, where that line sits between aggravating and severe and aggravating.
How long has that case been before the Supreme Court?
I just started this spring, I believe, but I don't know for sure. I think it was briefed in January, argued in April. If I remember right. So it's pretty recent still. But the bottom line in this case, though, is we don't have severe and aggravating circumstances. We don't even have substantial and compelling circumstances to warrant the double upward departure. The presumptive sentence here is 111 months. That's what should be imposed in this situation because the nudity just doesn't support a finding of particular vulnerability in this case where there's no evidence that the nudity impaired the victim's ability to seek help, to escape, or to fight back. They didn't testify to that. They were on the stand. They could have testified to that. That evidence was just never presented to the court. So the district court is clearly erroneous in finding this because there's no basis in law or fact here.
Could I ask you, is there any finding anywhere, either orally on the bench or in the written findings, that of a severe aggravating factor? Was that ever a finding of the court?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't recall that it was. It's not in the orders.
I don't recall seeing it. That's why I'm asking you if I missed it.
Yeah. No, I don't recall seeing that in the transcripts. It's not in the orders. The court found substantial and compelling, but that was as far as the court got. Originally, this case started out based on a dangerous offender departure, and so we're back now. That factor has gone away, and now we're only looking at the particular vulnerability factor. And it's our position that that simply doesn't apply here. If the court has no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Utenauer. We'll have time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning or afternoon, mm-hmm. Your Honor. May it please the court, Ms. Utenauer. I am happy to address the issues in whatever order the court would like me to. Ms. Utenauer responded to some...
I'm going to ask you to state your name for a recorded record this morning.
Oh, I apologize, Your Honor. Kristen Swanson, Assistant St. Louis County Attorney here on behalf of respondent.
Thank you.
Your Honor, the courts have already touched on, in the conversation with Ms. Utenauer today, the fact that the guidelines are non-exclusive and the court would be free to consider the nudity in this particular case as a particular vulnerability. One of the things that I wanted to bring up today that the court has already addressed is the similarity with the particular nudity, or the nudity in this matter, being comparable to the cases in which the presence of a child renders someone more vulnerable. And I do think that's an appropriate comparison. The court has referred to one of those cases. There are two additional cases, State versus Johnson, 450 Northwest 2nd, 134, 135, where a double durational departure was justified, including the fact that a 14-year-old sexual assault victim was particularly vulnerable due to the fact that she was babysitting two infants and she was not free to try to flee because she had a responsibility to the infants who were present.
Presumably, additionally, though, Ms. Swanson, presumably in those cases there was testimony to support that. And of course, Ms. Utenauer's argument here is there is no evidence that these individuals, despite the fact that they were nude, felt that they could not leave, could not fight back. So how do you address that lack of evidence?
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree that that evidence isn't there. I just don't think that it's categorized in that fashion. There is substantial testimony from the victims related to how the overall conduct made them feel, and I think it's impossible to sever the nudity from that.
It's kind of hard to suggest, though, isn't it, that attempt to escape or to do something is hampered by nudity when all the guns are pointed at them as well. You have to separate that out in some fashion?
Well, Your Honor, I think it reduces the likelihood that they will do so. And these facts are what...
You mean the nudity would do it and the guns wouldn't?
Well, we can't ignore the guns, obviously, but the behavior of the appellant and his co-defendant demonstrated a belief that the firearms enough were not going to be sufficient basis to ensure that they could gain compliance from the victim and his significant other. They knew that they were going to need to have the compliance and cooperation of the male victim in this case in order to gain access to the safe. and the order given by the co-defendant in the presence of the appellant, who did nothing to stop or thwart it or stop it until, in essence, the crime was already committed, took place after the fact that they were stripped down naked or ordered to strip down naked. So I think if they thought the guns were enough, then why proceed down that road in terms of asking them to remove their clothing if it wasn't necessary to assist them in completion of the crime, consistent with the court's finding, the trial court's finding rather, and obviously was necessary to accomplish the overall criminal goal.
Assuming
keeping in mind that the master...
Assuming we agreed with
go ahead, sir.
Assuming we agreed with you that it was an aggravating factor, what makes it a severe aggravating factor?
Your Honor, I disagree with the assertion that this is a double upward departure. And I disagree with that assertion because, as I point out in my brief, the guidelines range for the severity level offense of a severity level 8 with someone whose criminal history score is in excess of 6 is 95 to 132. So a double departure from the top of the box would be in excess of 240 months. So I disagree that this is a departure based on severe aggravating factors, that it is a double upward departure. In response to a question
on those
that
cases
was posed
that,
to Ms.
On those cases that have defined double upward, have they gone from the number in the box in the center or from the one end or the other?
Your Honor, I think that anything within the box is
no, no, I'm asking you what you think. I'm asking you what the cases say about that, if anything.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure that the case law that I'm familiar with, and obviously I'm not familiar with all of it, address that it has to be the presumptive sentence for the departure. And if that case law exists and I'm wrong, then certainly I'll need to learn that. So the other point that I would like to bring up to the court is to address the fact that this case was previously on appellate review and there was a finding of substantial and compelling circumstances justifying the sentence, and it analyzed the facts of the case as well as the appellant's involvement in them. And that case was decided, as Ms. Eitenauer noted, by the Court of Appeals. The case number with the appellate courts was A161046. The opinion was issued on March 13th of 2017. And the facts of that case, granted it was on review at that point pursuant to dangerous offender, the whole basis we're back here again before the Court of Appeals relates to an underlying conviction being vacated, which rendered the statutory ability to enhance the sentence no longer applicable. But the factual findings from the Court of Appeals in that decision included, and I'm quoting, although Raybould, this is the appellant of course, did not sexually touch the victims, he and his accomplice broke into a home in the middle of the night, confronted the victims in their bedroom, ordered the victims to undress, and threatened the victims with weapons. A review of similar cases indicate that Raybould's 240-month sentence does not exaggerate his criminality and is not otherwise disproportionate, unreasonable, or unjustified by the circumstances of the case. In another portion of the opinion, the opinion states that his efforts to stop the sexual assault do not lessen his culpability for aggravated robbery. While Raybould stopped Sorensen from further sexually assaulting LL, this is the female victim, his participation in the robbery and his acceptance of Sorensen's order that the victims undress created the condition that allowed the sexual assault to happen in the first place. And I believe that goes back to whether the facts of this case support a determination of substantial and compelling circumstances. The trial court, understanding this is de novo review, but the trial court, who was in the best position, having heard the testimony, drawing reasonable inferences therefrom, found that the nudity was a substantial factor in this case. The case went up on review, and this court, obviously not comprised of the same panel members, determined that the facts of the case did provide substantial and compelling circumstances justifying a non-guideline sentence. Another thing that I would like to direct the court's attention to is the distinction made in the court's order that the vulnerability in these cases, or in this particular case related to the nudity, was more of a psychological factor as opposed to a physical factor. There are two cases, obviously, that are not binding on this court. One from the 8th District Court of Appeals in Ohio that was decided on August 8th of 2002. State of Ohio versus Willie Ogletree Jr. This is an unpublished decision indicating that an upward departure for the sentence duration was appropriate where the psychological harm to the young teenage victims who suffered the indignity of being held at gunpoint, forced to disrobe, and run naked through the streets was an appropriate basis for a sentencing departure. Another case, again, not precedential, from the United States Court of Appeals 6th District, United States of America versus Mitchell Lucas. And this is a published decision, 889 Federal 2D 697, allowed for an aggravated sentence when an individual during the course of a bank robbery ordered the bank tellers to strip naked and then locked them into the bank vault. And that, again, was based on psychological trauma sustained by them based upon being forced to disrobe, which aren't elements of the underlying offenses themselves.
Could I ask you this, because and it's kind of, it's getting back to questions that Judge Klopaki was asking you. What is there in this record, either by way of findings or evidence, that would support this is a severe aggravating factor as opposed to just simply an aggravating factor?
Your Honor, that language does not appear in terms of a specific finding saying this is a severe aggravating factor. There are other findings within the court's orders. In terms of the order issued in 2019, the trial court noted, appellant brought terror and humiliation into these victims' lives. This is just the sort of case aggravated sentences were made for. Now, understanding it doesn't say severe aggravating factor, Your Honor, but this is at the conclusion of the order setting forth all of the factual findings as to why the nudity itself justified the sentence that was imposed.
Well, you would agree that severe aggravating factor is something worse than an aggravating factor. Right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's consistent
then
with the case.
How do
law.
We determine what is severe and what's just aggravating?
Your Honor, I think it's based upon the facts and circumstances of the case, based upon the court's collective and collegial opinions, reviewing a number of these cases and reviewing the appeals.
But would you agree that the court, as a matter of law, if we find that there was a double departure, that the court had to find, there has to be a finding or evidence of severe aggravating factors. Is that
Your
law?
Honor, I don't believe that there needs to appear within the order itself some type of magic word or phrase stating severe aggravating factors. And I believe, as Ms. Eitenauer alluded to, that is the present argument before the Minnesota Supreme Court on the Barthman case. That was another St. Louis County case, albeit I was fortunate enough to not have to prosecute that matter. But I don't believe the state of the law requires that those specific words exist. I think the court has to find that there are substantial and compelling circumstances and that those exist on the record, and the factual findings related thereto support the sentence that's imposed. Your Honors, lastly, I would say I do believe the cases referred to by the defense can be distinguished from the case before the court today. Again, this is based upon the fact that the vulnerability with forced nudity is largely psychological in nature, consistent with the findings in the trial court's order, and the Leija case, which was relied upon heavily by the state, involve individuals who have very different involvements in the offense. The appellant in this case had a much larger role in this particular offense than the appellant in the appellant in the Leija matter. In this case, the appellant was the mastermind and put this entire chain of events together, as this court has previously found, as is supported by the record, since he knew the family, he had been in the house, he knew what needed to take place in order for him to access the guns from the safe, whereas the involvement in the primary offense in the Leija case for that particular appellant was somewhat lessened from what we have here in this particular case. They also had very dissimilar criminal histories.
Can you remind me? Can you remind me again? What was the sentence that appellant's colleague received?
I think it was 171.
That sounds correct, Your Honor. Yes.
Was the criminal history substantially different between that person and the appellant?
Your Honor, Mr. Sorensen's criminal history going into the sentencing for the first offense on this matter was zero. Mr. Raybould's was 10, though with the elimination of the conviction that has since been vacated, it would now, as we sit here today, be 9.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you, Ms. Swanson.
Thank you.
Ms. Eitnauer, any rebuttal?
Okay, thank you. Your Honor, I think the bottom line here comes down to that there's no indication that the defendant knew that his co-defendant was going to order that the victim strip nude. There's no indication that that was part of the plan when they went into this. There's no indication in the record that the victims were actually thwarted or hampered by their nudity rather than the guns. I think it's pretty clear from the record that the guns provided the compulsion to comply with the defendant's demands. Counsel brought up the previous Court of Appeals opinion and the language in that opinion. At that point, we were arguing about the dangerous offender factor. We weren't talking about the particular vulnerability factor. The victims here were nude in their own home. That differentiates it from the new cases that she just cited today. They were not out in public. They weren't subject to any further public humiliation. As far as which term we look at within the guidelines for the departure and determining whether it's a double upward departure or not, the case law Shattuck and Spain, which were cited in my brief, both refer to the presumptive term. And the presumptive term in this case is 111 months. I think that language is important when considering whether or not this is actually more than a double upward departure, which it is, consistent with the language in those cases. She's correct. The co-defendant did have a 171-month sentence. It was a departure in the co-defendant's case as well, but the co-defendant had much more substantial, compelling, and aggravating factors to warrant the departure in his case. As far as determining where that aggravating and severe aggravating factors line is, I think the language in Norton is indeed the collective and collegial opinion of the courts. In this case, we just don't have that. Even if this court were to find that nudity could support the factor of particular vulnerability, this particular case does not have the facts for it to support that basis.
Since the argument's being asserted that, you know, this should be comparable to the co-defendant's sentence, was nudity factored into particular vulnerability for that sentence?
I don't know. I just know that an upward departure was involved in that case, and that the co-defendant was also, I believe, convicted of the sexual assault that later occurred in this case. I think the facts just don't support that Raybould knew going into this that his co-defendant was going to order the nudity. He certainly didn't know that his co-defendant was going to sexually assault the woman. Granted, all of this happens after the elements of the offense are met. He still stopped the sexual assault. He still covered up the victims. He did what he could when he could.
He didn't object to the disrobing, though. I mean, that's also factually.
He did not at the time when his co-defendant was also holding a gun, pointing a gun at everybody in the room. He did not object at that point. No, but when his co-defendant left the room to retrieve the guns, that's when Raybould covered up the victims. But at that point,
they're downstairs.
Right. They had been downstairs. But they were not out in public, so that's very different from any of those other cases. So I would urge the court to find that nudity here does not support the factor of particular vulnerability, especially in this case, and that a double upward departure is excessive and exaggerates the criminality of Raybould's conduct when divorced from the conduct of his co-defendants.
All right.
And if the court has nothing further.
Thank you, Ms. Eitenauer. And thank you, Ms. Swanson. The case has been submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That's Thank you.
The last matter on our calendar for oral argument this morning, and so the court's in recess.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.